Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. If your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email BYNTK at pioneer-ks.org.
Hi, my name is Denise Carter. I live in Geneva, Switzerland. I'm originally from the UK, but I've lived over here for the last 29 years. I just realized the other day that I was catching up with a colleague, that actually is half my life. So I'm also giving away a little bit my age there. I absolutely love working in information. I've worked in information for 35 years, and I still find it fascinating. I still find it interesting. I still find it motivating every day to get up and do my job. I have spent most of my career working in corporate environments, but I have to say the most fantastic job or work experience, the thing that I really kind of sticks in my mind, is when I was on work experience when I was still at university trying to get my library degree, and I went out on a mobile library in Sheffield in the UK, and I just had the most superb day with two fantastic people. And it was a real lesson in how you can have a lot of fun and still do a great job and do something wonderful. They were really doing a fantastic job, and everybody we went to on that day, you could tell that was a real meaningful service for them. And it was just great. And it's just, you have that in back of my head when you have a team, when you have, you know, group of people, you can still have fun when you're at work. And why shouldn't you? I have worked in corporate, but I currently work for myself, and I've done that for the past 10 years. I'm celebrating 10 years of Decision Consult. What we do in Decision Consult is I provide competitive intelligence and business analysis services for pharmaceutical and biotech companies. I like to stay connected to people. You know, working for yourself is just absolutely fantastic, but there is a moment sometimes when you just feel a little bit isolated. Even me, who is a true introvert, who found it much better to be away from people and get the energy that I needed and just be with people, rather than the 5-2 being 5 days with people and 2 people away, it was certainly the other way around. But I still need to be connected to people. I need to grow my network. I need to have people there. And the best way that I do that is by joining either networking groups or by belonging to associations. But if I belong to association, I really like to belong. I like to volunteer. I like to get involved, because that's really the best way to meet the people, to connect with those people in that organization.
So a library opportunity was your doorway to a new world.
And it really was. I mean, it was quite a big decision, because, I mean, I came here on my own.
Yeah, a big,
you know,
deal.
I came and you sort of come to an empty apartment. I mean, obviously my stuff came with me, but you come here, and then also, you know, I go into the office and basically they just gave me an empty room. I mean, it was a literal, here's a room, fill it, make a library. I mean, it was really like,
make it happen. Go do that library stuff. Make it work.
Yeah. And you go like, oh, okay.
You had a blank sheet. You had a blank check and a blank sheet to do whatever you wanted
really,
to do.
Yeah, really had a blank sheet. And I must say, working for that company was just a delight. They were a very small company. There were only 150 people in the building at that time. I mean, it grew much bigger. So you knew everybody and had no hierarchy.
Wow.
I was used to working in a huge organization. That's where I'd been before. And that's why it didn't suit me, you know. But I didn't know that. I didn't know enough at that point to understand what worked for me and what didn't. Now I understood, no, I need a smaller environment where I'm closer to people, where I have a real connection. And that was just great. And it's very unusual to have that kind of no hierarchy. Mm. People were treated for how important they were and how important the job they were doing was to the organization.
Oh, my.
So you'd meet somebody on quite a, you know, a sort of lowly grade, so to speak, but you were told this is a really key person in the organization because they do X, Y, Z. So you must always, if they ask you something, you must always do something for them, because what they do is critical to the running of the organization.
By design. Now, is that typical in that region to have an organization that way?
No. I haven't worked in many places, but I really haven't come across that elsewhere. I think it was, it was a family-owned firm. Person who was running, he had a very particular way of doing things, and it was definitely his style. His style kind of came through. Mm. I mean, some of that disappeared later as he unfortunately, moved on and his son took over, and, things changed and the organization grew because we just grew bigger and, they got more products onto the market. But at that time, it was interesting. What never went away from that organization was if you had an idea, you just said, I've got an idea. And they said, just go with it. Just go with it. It's fine.
Whoa.
As long as you could justify why you were going to do it and what you thought it was going to bring. And they thought, that could work. You just went with it. I ended up starting, what was a very kind of traditional library was what they wanted. They wanted to move the books and the journals in. They wanted a kind of table of contents service. And I was doing just, very basic level library stuff. But then, I could see gaps like, people need this information. Maybe I could just write a report on that.
Right.
Do some searching. I could send this. I could do here. We could, the internet started to happen. The intranet started to happen for us. We were a bit slow, technically speaking, but it started to happen. Okay, I could put some things on the intranet. We could gather information in a different way. We could present.
You kind of soft shoe into the realm of building intelligence.
Yes.
Or the synthesis of what intelligence production is all about, which is to take parts and pieces to make assumptions and predictions and all that sort of thing. So did you know that at the time, that's what you were?
No, I don't think I really understood that, maybe until later, that's what I'd sort of almost instinctively been doing is kind of just really, because the other thing is, because I knew everybody and I knew what they wanted, and we had more of a kind of open dialogue, and you saw people face to face more, you really could say, okay, yeah, I think for that group of people, this piece of information is what they need.
Exactly.
And really make that match. So when maybe I just have that in my head and then I did something and I presented it to them, it nearly always, was met with kind of like, oh, that's great. Yeah, I didn't know I was looking for that, but now you've presented it to me. I did know that's what I was looking for. That can I have more of it? So it became a kind of very positive experience. And I think what made me suddenly realize, I probably had sort of really shifted, was I had a boss when I first started, and I think really she took me eventually. She was not the first person to interview me. She was kind of like the second person. And I think she took me. I understood afterwards several people had been for that job and decided it wasn't for them for whatever reason. And I don't think she ever really rated me as somebody who was going to be able to do something. And then she left the organization after a year. Then I think, different things started to happen and I started to work differently. And I think I just got over some of the nerves maybe I had. It was very difficult that first year just to sort of be there. And so you relax, you start to become more yourself, you start to do these other things. I started working with people. And she came back after about 6 years just to do some freelance work for the organization. And she was, I think, partly surprised to find I was still there. And then partly surprised when she started talking to people about me. They were like, oh, Denise in the library. Oh, she's great. She does this. She does that. And she was like, this is not the person I recognize.
To her credit,
she had the, she did come and say that to me. She said, I misjudged you and I was wrong about what I thought you were capable of. And I can see that you were capable of more. So, which was nice too.
It's funny. I got to bring up, I just had a discussion yesterday where we talked about where a lot of the organizations that want to get the right people in your organization that will do the right thing and all that, the hiring practice and all that. It's almost, I think the summary coming out of that discussion yesterday was that you just don't know. You make your best guess. You're trying to evaluate somebody on the way into an organization, and you've got this whole criteria built out of, I don't know, it's almost ridiculous to think you can just, you say yay or nay of somebody coming in an organization with a prediction that it's going to work out. Sometimes you just don't know because everything shifts, in your example, this woman had a predefined what that role was in her head, I'm guessing. And she's like, oh, you're not it. You know, whatever that judgment call was. But you know what? You were the right person at the right time, at the right opportunity to push where that needed to go, right? So there's part of the mystery, and I'll call it a mystery because that's any organization that's successful has got an air of mystery, I think, to it, because you just don't realize all the parts and pieces that's going to make it work.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And I mean, that's the hardest thing too. And, you know, when I then, you know, sort of started to get a team together, you know, because at the beginning, this was just a one person operation. And then as we grew, you know, it started to, so you can have some people, not necessarily full-time employees. I started off with some temp help and then, you know, gradually got some full-time employees. But it is difficult to find the right people who are just going to, you know, gel together, who are also going to be able to work together.
Well, let's back up the train here. I want you to define what's the difference between, and I'm going to hold you to this because it's a question in my mind. What's the difference between business intelligence and competitive intelligence? Is there a difference or are they the same thing?
To me, they're the same thing.
Okay.
To me, it's the same thing. It's really about the intelligence part, not about the kind of the first word. It's really that.
Okay.
To me, the intelligence bit is where you're taking disparate bits of data and you just make them tell a story. You just make them say something.
Say something. Yeah. Yeah. But that synthesis piece, right? And that's what that is doing the reformation of different parts to say something that you see. That takes vision. Yeah. You cannot go into this, in my opinion, you cannot go into this field and assume that AI is going to crank out the intel for whatever. Because there is a level of interpretation, and I want to dare say creativity in an artistic way, to see things not normally perceived. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And my best example of that is currently I have a client. I do every morning, I sit and I put together 8 to 10 things that have happened kind of overnight. I'm doing this for a US company, and it's for the very, very senior executives. And it hits their mobile phone at kind of 5 a.m. East Coast time. And it's just the things they need to know that have happened kind of yesterday or overnight.
Yeah.
So they're not taken by surprise by anything.
And I'm going to have to assume in a very small field, right? In a very small scope that's targeted to what they need.
It's a big pharma company. It's anything in the kind of the pharma environment that's happened. So anything that's sort of happened in
that any could impact areas, or
that
could
touch. Impact them.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's either a big piece of news that's come out about a competitor, so everyone's going to be talking about it. So they don't want to be the person who's like, oh, what's that? I don't know.
What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. No, I know. Yeah. And mainly it is everything that you would expect, but occasionally there are just things that I pop in there because to me, having seen things on their website, having seen other things that are coming up, I think, you know what? It's not in their field, but it could be interesting. If I was sitting in their position, I would be interested by that. And I just cannot see that an AI is going to be able to replicate that.
Well, I would agree.
And 99% of time, what I send them may not be interesting, but I'm sure 1% of time, there's just something that sparks something and you go, that's an idea. Yeah. It's not that, but it's an idea. It gives me an idea.
So in the field of intelligence that I'm accustomed to, you have things that are classified as either need to know or nice to know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter
yes.
if you know. You know, these are different.
Exactly.
It's like triage of the importance of whatever this content is.
Yeah.
And that is something that falls squarely on your shoulders as the agent of intelligence building, because you decide what's in or out.
And I mean, that's partly a kind of responsibility, but it's also the excitement of the job. I mean, that's what makes it interesting is kind of, you know, can I spot that? Do I see it? You know, what is it that I would?
Yeah.
But it also, I think it also requires you always to be able to put your headspace in the headspace of someone else.
Does that mean you have the sympathetic emotional intelligence? You have a sympathetic and emotional intelligence to be in the other shoes, to be able to...
Yeah, I think so.
You've got to have a bit of perspective of what that is, or you'll fail because everything is from your perspective, and it'd be like, that doesn't fit at all. What are you talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you need to be able to put your own ego aside and just go, this is what these other people would be thinking, or, you know,
right.
It's just interesting when you talk about, I mean, just to go back a little bit, you know, this kind of AI thing, because for me, you know, when you're saying, oh, you're just doing a news curation service, it's kind of, that's something that people automatically think, oh, I could, you know, you could have AI all over that in a second.
I get an app that does that.
Get an app. It can do that. There's no problem.
I put in my own keywords. It just does it. Yeah.
You know, but there's the same time, like, what keywords would you put in to spot the thing that I've just spotted? You can't.
Exactly. That you don't know what it is.
Because you don't know until you see it. You don't know until you see it. You don't know until after the event. Oh, I might have needed a keyword for that, because it's sometimes so out of,
You're a bridge maker. You're a bridge maker and an intermediary, because you're taking from something and creating something new, or creating an opportunity to something new. And you're providing the structure, you're providing the flow, and it's up to them to say yay or nay. And I have to assume, I think you said, if you get 1%, that's like, woohoo, that's gold, right?
Well, that's gold.
If you can get the 1%, that shoots them over the moon. They go off on a different way, and it's a game changer.
It is. Doing what I do, I'll never know what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably will never know. I'm too kind of, you know, far away from that to see, you know, to see that sort of come.
See what the impact is.
See what the impact is, but I'm sure it's there. I'm absolutely sure it's there.
So how many organizations do you think out there need to focus on building this structure of intelligence, and or, because you can have environmental intelligence, competitive intelligence, internal intelligence. I mean, that can be split in a lot of different ways. But what would be your suggestion to any organization, big or small, that would be good advice? Other than call you, I get that.
Well, other than call me, which would be obviously, you know, yes, call me, because I can do that for you. You took the words right out of my mouth there.
I saw your wheel spinning. You're like, well, my number is,
When you start your organization, however small it is, don't think that you are going to be able to keep hold of all the information that you need. And you will frighteningly soon come to the point when you can't do that anymore. And I meet so many small businesses who tell me, oh, yeah, you know, they maybe ask for one piece of information from me or one, you know, job. And then they say, oh, yeah, well, you know, because we have all our information, because we're small, there's three of us, we go to the conferences, we know the main players, we know the people, we know. You're like, do you? Are you sure? Because I'm sure that if I did a double check on that, you don't actually know everything that you need to know. And it's not only just, you know it, but then it's remembering it, and it's remembering it at the right time to reuse it back again. So it's having some kind of system in place that when you do know something, you can put it somewhere that you get it back when you need it back, and you don't have to relook for it somewhere else again externally. And I mean, huge pharma companies are paying external people all the time to get information they've already had, they already know, and it's there. They just can't find it within their own organization, because it's not necessarily that it's in a file or it's in a report. It may be, but it's been in someone's head and they've said it at a meeting and they've told them that information earlier on. Somebody has sat in a meeting and told them early stage, I mean, I'm talking specifically about pharma and bio because that's what I know, but early on, something's just about, they want to put it into trial, and they're talking about that. They're talking about the first trials, and somebody has said something very critical, very important, but it doesn't get noted. It doesn't get filed away. And later on, that becomes very important and very pertinent, but they knew it. They knew it then, but you know, it wasn't captured. It wasn't. And it's not easy to capture all those pieces of information. I mean, it's not saying that that's something that's very easy, but you have to at least understand that you need to try and you need to have some systems in place.
You're saying just if they had some good knowledge management practices, then it wouldn't be such a big issue.
Well, it wouldn't be such a big issue, but I mean, I think it's not only knowledge management. I mean, I think it is information management as well. I mean, knowledge management, they lose a lot of information through not capturing knowledge correctly. That's and not having any kind of knowledge practices whatsoever. That's bad absolutely practices. For sure. You know, they lose a lot of information too. I mean, they'll have they'll have somebody come in and do a report for them. Six people will see that report, it gets filed away. Nobody ever mentions then to mm-hmm. another 12 people that report was even done. Yep. And nobody knows that information was already done, captured, and is around. And a few months later, a few years later, somebody will ask the same question, and sometimes they'll bring back the same people.
To do it again, yeah.
To answer the same question, no. And they're just, oh, yeah. And they won't
oh,
say,
no. We'll,
oh, yeah,
we'll
we did
gladly yeah. charge you again to just update the report we just did. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Ka-ching.
The bureaucratic way that sounds is very familiar with me working Department of Defense, Department of the Army, because you get so big, and if there is no enterprise level access and or coordination or curation, then it is a black hole of all this time, effort, resources, results, all that just get thrown into this black hole cupboard, and they just are destined to do it again. We'll spend resources and do it again,
yeah,
because we didn't care enough to do anything with it the first time. So the organization that fails to structure itself to where there is an enterprise mentality, and I'll say expected behaviors of how things need to be and enforced, there's got to be some enforcement there, they're destined to just keep spinning their wheels and spending money on something they've already got and or they shouldn't need to be spending money on. So that's a risk mitigation, right? We're talking risk mitigation, yeah, to the organization's bottom line.
Absolutely.
And if you're re-spending the same money on the same thing, you're foolish. You're absolutely foolish. A lot of companies do it. A lot of organizations still do it. So what's your guffaw moment? What is your like slap upside the head when you see this and you think, how is this even possible? How is this even how are you people still in business? You know, right? I mean, there's got to be some of that.
But there is. I mean, I think very first time that happened to me, and I was still working inside the organization, so I wasn't outside the organization. I was working inside the organization, and I was working with some people from marketing who had been marketing a particular product for a long time. We didn't have that many products at that time. Yeah. I pulled out a pipeline for them of what was in what the competitors were. They genuinely had never seen that before. They genuinely had no idea who really literally were their competitors. They knew basically.
Should know? Because, marketing should know that.
Well, to me, I was like, hello? is it me? What's happening? I mean, I was really like, and it was always a situation where, I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of information people speak about that. You're always kind of like, oh no, you know, we're not going to give you a huge grade job or anything because, you know, it's just information. Any person can do that. It's so easy to do that. We don't need any, you know, so you're always talking to people, you know, like 10 grades ahead of you who know you're being paid to do kazoo, and then they're going, no. I didn't realize there were so many competitors. this is interesting. And can you do it for other kind of, you know? Yeah. I was like, oh my Lord, yeah. How are these people getting their paycheck? So, I mean, I think that was one moment. I see it in lots of little instances where people are living with half the information that they actually need, or they've looked in one place and they feel that's sufficient. You know, if you're really looking for competitive information, you have to look in several places, see if the information matches up, validate the information. There's a kind of bigger story to tell with that, because people will, you know, if you just look at one of the pipeline databases, yeah, you might get a general overview that there's 50 competitors, but if you really dig down into that and you then validate that, you find actually, no, there's more like 30 real competitors, because a lot of people are keeping it on their website because it just looks good. They don't want to take it off yet.
Yeah.
there's many reasons.
Haven't had any sales in 2 years, but we're
so yeah. There's lots of times you know you double check and you go, well, no.
I want to spark on this because you bring up something that I think a lot of people disregard or are not aware about, is in the true sense of verify and identify and validate. Because it's like you say, you know, you look at one thing and I was like, oh, I've done my research. Yeah, but you didn't validate anything. So you can't take anything as face value. You have to find corresponding data that either confirms or denies whatever you think you know.
Yes.
And if you don't do that due diligence, you're always operating on a false pretense.
Absolutely. I think a lot of times that happens because people have got their first set of information from a paid source. So they feel because they've paid for it, it must be.
It's top shelf. Yeah, right.
It's top shelf. I've paid a certain amount of money for this, so obviously it must be right. And so they don't.
I think they call that the scientific method. Isn't that what they call the scientific? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. You know, and I'm like, okay, you know, but if you take something like a pipeline database, I mean, God knows how many different, you know, indications and just drugs that's looking at. I mean, you're talking about thousands and thousands of drugs. You can't possibly say that they've got every one of those right. I mean, you know, they'd have to, I mean, they just can't employ enough people to check. And I mean, you know, I'm not trying to drag down because they do the best they can. And they also do some validation within those databases. It's not that they just pull it out, but they haven't got time to do everything all the time. And you don't know what the last thing is they looked at. You don't know which section they've just validated and which section they validated six months ago.
That's true.
So, you know, you have to do your own kind of double check on something. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't give someone a pipeline that was just out of one database, you know, one source. I mean, it absolutely wouldn't happen.
But
there is that thing, I think, you know, about, people have paid for it. So they feel like it's
good.
That thing about paying, because I remember talking to one of my bosses, and this just goes back to knowledge, because he was saying, oh, well, yeah, but the knowledge is free because we don't pay for that. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. I said, because I didn't know you worked for free because they pay me a salary. And he was like, oh, I get it.
Wait a minute now. So reframe what was his assumption?
The knowledge within the organization was just free. We didn't pay for it. We didn't pay for knowledge because knowledge was just, you know, what people said. He could tell you something and that's free. And I was like, really? They don't pay you a salary? And he was like,
No overhead whatsoever to any of that.
But it was interesting to me because it also gave me a different perspective on how people view that. He really thought, knowledge is just a free thing that anybody would.
It just happens. It just happens as part of the environment.
And you think, well, if that was true, I mean, every time there was a one company took over another company, mm-hmm. there's a reason why they keep the staff on. They may not keep them on indefinitely, but they certainly keep them on for a certain length of time.
They got to get the how-to somewhere in the system.
Yeah. You know, most times when companies are merging, they're buying maybe a product, but what they're really buying is the knowledge in that company. They're not paying for the product. I mean, they're paying for the knowledge that's going to create the next project.
So we've had an interesting discussion about organizations and enterprises and all of those parts and pieces that can either help or not help an organization stay afloat. But with all that said, what is your best advice in anyone looking to get into this field? Not library sciences, that was your start point.
That's my start point.
Where you ended up. You got some listeners that are like, oh, you know, I kind of think like that. I'm usually the oddball out. I see things differently. Maybe I'm cut out for this business intelligence or intelligence work. What would you say to them?
Then I'd say, because there are quite a few courses on that you can take. There are quite a few courses where you can get a certificate. Okay. Because I think you do need some training in how to do it. A lot of it is instinct, but there is also some training you need just, I think, to understand really the best way to kind of guide your own curiosity and the best way to kind of harness your own curiosity and to use the skills that you've got, you know, the most efficient way and to understand how people. And then I think it's also a lot to do with how to present that information back in the right way and kind of keep collecting it. So, I mean, you don't need to go do a whole kind of, you know,
degree
or anything, but I think there are enough courses out there. But I would recommend that because I think that it helps cement in your own head whether that's something you really want to do. But it also just gives you some kind of tools to hang that on.
Any recommendations for either books or sources or folks to follow or read or?
That's a good question. This is testing my memory now, which is not always the the best thing.
I told you there was going to be a test.
There's going to be a test, and now I'm like, oh my god, I never remember anybody's name. That's my problem.
Well, let's take the pressure off. And in the anything you want to send me, because when we build your show on a
I can send you some links of have a look at kind of SCIP, the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals. Definitely have a look at them. And I know they have a kind of free membership as well at the moment where you can get a limited amount of materials just as a look-see. But then, there are a couple of people that you probably need to follow.
One of the things that came out of my memory box was in my military background, we use obsessively the concept of critical thinking.
Yes.
Critical thinking is one of those things that kind of fits into this box because it goes back to the judgment, the validation, the credibility, all the things that prove things positive or negative. It's a lot of work in military intelligence. If you don't have multiple sources that can verify and collaborate or corroborate a point in time, then really you can't take action on a one source report, ideally. I mean, you just don't get one source and say, oh, we're going to go do this.
No, absolutely.
No, that's not how it works. It's interesting that you bring up intuition because I feel that that's a heavy part of this also, because you can train and build certain skills in people, but there is just something. I don't know if I could put my finger on it, but it is something that is part of the human framework that makes somebody super sharp at doing this. What is that?
I don't know, but it is a little bit that intuition, and it is a bit like, I think if you like kind of detective shows and mystery shows and kind of, you know, that kind of problem solving and that kind of just seeing, you know, like seeing something behind something else, like somebody's doing something, but asking yourself, why are they doing it?
Yes.
Which is part of the critical thinking. It's always that why are they doing that?
What's the motivation?
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
You know, it's like,
so
why?
Even if you were just watching like a soap opera or something, you're thinking, but why? Why are they saying that now? Because they weren't saying that yesterday. What are they going to do
ridiculous.
Next?
I mean, exactly. Yeah. What's really going on here?
There's somebody. And, you know, you can have, I know one of my clients asked me a question a couple of weeks ago. They were saying, oh, this particular thing has happened. Why do you think that's happened? And I said, you know, why have they announced this? You know, I said, okay, the X, Y, Z that you can sort of see written down, and you know, maybe it points to this, and I said, but you know, there was also a person that's just left. They may have left because they've got a much better job, because it was a much better job they went to, but they may also have left because they didn't like what was happening.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's total supposition on my part. I mean, that's and there's no way I can verify that unless I meet that person and ask them. But it fed into that, and it could also, in my mind, it was a high likelihood that that was part of it. Because sometimes, there's a better job, but you might say, okay, it's maybe a more significant job. But sometimes that's not always what motivates people to have a job. When it could be like, they hadn't been at this other company very long, and you're like, well, you know, there's a few things there that are pointing to, why did they jump ship? And is that part of it? Is it this thing that's happening now because they were saying, don't do that, it's the wrong path, I disagree with it, I'm out. And then this person's gone, no, I'm going to do it.
You bring up one of the big pieces that is in the world of intelligence is that you have to not only verify and validate, but to show what's there. You just brought up the big mystery to this, and that is being able to identify the gaps.
Yes.
We know X, X, and X, but wow, there's a big gap between this one, just like in your example.
Yeah.
Business intelligence, the work of intelligence, is filling in the gaps to make the best guess of what could be.
Absolutely.
Then, so you're a bit of the oracle, you got your little magic ball out, and you're like, But if you don't have the perceptions, if you don't have that ability to see beyond what's evident and make suppositions, your word, suppositions of what could be and what's likely, you're not built for this kind of work. You are not going to do well in the world of intelligence.
No, absolutely not.
So
yeah.
The gaps, and I just want to leave the listener with that. The gaps are just, and probably more so important than what's evident.
Totally. That's where you're looking for the insights. And it's the insights bit that most people can't do. And people will tell you all the time, I'll give you an insight. It's rare to get an insight. It's a rare, rare beast. It's a rare bird.
Yeah. And it's highly prized.
Yes. It's what we're aiming for is the insight, but it's hard to get there.
To bring an end to our great discussion, what would you say is your definition of knowledge management?
Ooh, good question. My definition of knowledge management is capturing the things that don't get written down, but the organization needs to know.
So is that strictly tacit knowledge? Are we going after, is that your prized possession?
I think my prized possession is the tacit knowledge. I mean, I think it is. I think it's that thing that people do instinctively. Then you have to extract the instinctive bit. But even if you ask them sometimes, what do you do? They don't tell you. You'd have to say, exactly. Show me what you do.
Good idea. Yes.
And then when they show you, they do something different that they told that they didn't tell you. And that thing that they do differently, that's the thing you have to capture. And that to me is what you're trying to get at with knowledge management. But I don't know if it's a definition of knowledge management, but that's the thing to me that you're trying to get to. But that's my perception.
Well, and that's all we're dealing with today, Denise, is your perception. Any other bits of wisdom that you need to share?
Just when you mentioned about critical thinking, I was just going to say the one thing that I brought from library to this area, which remains very, very critical, is the ability to find the right question. So when someone asks you a question, getting them to actually tell you properly what the question is. And that skill is something you learn a little bit when you're doing library. You know, there's a reference interview and there's whatever, but there's a lot. And it feeds into critical thinking and it's part of that. But you can't really do a good business intelligence job or any kind of intelligence job until you really understand what people want to know. And it isn't the first thing they ask you. It's never, ever the first thing they ask you.
You're getting to a perception level to where, here again, to go back to what you said, you have to be in their shoes. In going back to what you know versus show me what you do, because there are certain parts of the awareness just aren't freely available at all times. And sometimes we skip over things. And I think you're right that not every question is the right question you want an answer for. And so you have to ask more questions. I reflect back on doing research, academic research, where you got a professor that's like beating you up on, why are you asking that? You really get beat up on, what's the right question? What should we be asking? And sometimes that really takes somebody that is external to the perspective or external to the problem in order to just come waltz in and just say, well, why aren't you looking at this? And it'd be like, I never thought of that. That is a hard nail to hit with the biggest hammer.
It is hard to hit. I mean, I think my learning so far is my best question to ask is like, what do you want to do with this information once you've got it? And when they start to answer that question, all of a sudden for them too,
yes.
Well, I want to do X, Y, Z. And then they go, oh, but if I want to do that, I probably need to know this as well. And it's often a question of not only the information they wanted to know, but how they wanted to know it and what format they need it back in. And I have found that helpful.
And I think there's a management style that is, and it's basically start with the end in mind.
Yes.
Where do we want to go?
Where are you going? Yeah.
What's the action out of this that you intend to get? And then that kind of reframes. I don't know why that is, and maybe we just are, as a human on the planet, we start at the first step, and we just think we always know what that first step is because we're the best to choose.
That's it.
You know?
Yeah, and this is it. People have worked through they've gone, I have the project, I'm going to go there. They've worked back themselves through the thing. So the first thing I'd need to know is X, and they've done that themselves. And then there's also part of people also don't want to tell you that they don't know everything. Mm. So they want to sort of ask a question in a way that's kind of like, I already know most of this.
Yeah.
But you could just fill in a few gaps for me that I don't know, which generally means they know absolutely nothing. We're going to have to stop that square one. But you don't say that to people. I mean, then that's when you learn tact and things. Yeah, so asking why, asking what they're going to do it's not the full thing, but it's a helpful start to getting them to just...
You're in the counseling business.
Well, I think you have to be a little bit as well.
Do you now? From your little corner in Switzerland, as you go jetting down the Alps and eat chocolate,
yeah.
And enjoy your day. Yes. Thank you, Denise.
Okay,
it was very engaging. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email bynTK@pioneer-ks.org. You have just finished our latest Because You Need to Know, a public service of Pioneer Knowledge Services. Please join us on LinkedIn and find us at pioneer-ks.org.